the minig is to bless our children, Yisimcha Elokim, the boys, Kefrayim v'Chemenashe. We give that bracha Friday night. It's a minig to do Erev Yom Kippur also. And it says in the Torah, Ki b'cha yivarech Yisrael, Klal Yisrael will bless their children through you. And as I said, Yisimcha Elokim Kefrayim v'Chemenashe, v'yosem es Ephraim, he put Ephraim before Menashe. The obvious question is, why don't we give kids a bracha already? Give them, you know, something all the way. Be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why like Ephraim and Menashe? And if already we're giving them a bracha, they should be like the Shvatim. How about Reuven, Shimon, and Levi? These are like the next generation, right? Ephraim and Menashe were Yosef's children, and they became tribes because of Yaakov giving Yosef that special designation. So why give of the bracha? They should be like Ephraim Menashe. Better they should be like Reuven, Shimon, and so on. Some say that the special bracha is that this is the first time in history, since the beginning of Bereishis, where you had two brothers, and there was no jealousy between them. Cain killed Hevel, right? And then there was what's it called, brothers of Yosef, right? And then there was others. Yaakov and Esav, right? Yaakov and Esav, and Yishmael and Yitzchak. And here, Ephraim was given a greater bracha than Menashe, and there was no jealousy between them. So children should be like that. They should be siblings like Ephraim and Menashe, not like all the other ones. That's what some people say. I have a much deeper understanding and probably more to the point. Why is that the bracha? Like Ephraim and Menashe, not like Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, not like the other Shvatim. Why Dafka? And what's so significant that Ephraim comes before Menashe? It has to be said in the bracha. Vayosem is Ephraim. He make a point that Ephraim came before Menashe. Let's first understand the concept of avos. We ain't karim la avos al shlosha. We don't call avos only three people, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And even though our fathers obviously are all the generations before us, but avos, that designation is only for those three people. Why? Because avos does not mean just fathers. It means the foundation and source of everything that comes after it. Just like on Shabbos, we have avos and toldos. The lamed tes malachos, the avos malacha, are the source. And everything that comes from that are called toldos. They're the secondary things. We learn them from those sources. But the source malachos are 39. They're the avos malacha. Lahavdil avos hatuma are the main source of Tumah, and then things that emanate from that are called toldos of Tumah. So avos doesn't just mean fathers, it means the source. In order to illustrate this, I want to mention something from 2 weeks from now, in Shmos. No, Vo'era, a few weeks from now. The Sedra Vo'era starts Va'era el Avram el Yitzchak ve'el Yaakov. I appear to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Rashi there adds two words in explanation of that sentence. Va'era el ha'avos. I appear to the avos. Now, Rashi doesn't say things that are not necessary. It says in the pasuk Va'era el Avram el Yitzchak ve'el Yaakov. Without Rashi, I wouldn't know there were the avos. What would I think? He's talking about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Schwartz, and Rashi has to tell me, no, those were the avos from Bereishis. They were the avos from. What do I need Rashi to tell me? Vo'era el ha'avos. What's Rashi adding here? What would I not think if Rashi didn't say that? Secondly, Rashi says there that God came to Moshe Rabbeinu with a complaint. And the complaint was I had very great people that I promised a lot of things, and they never saw that I fulfilled my promise. Just the opposite. I promised Avraham Avinu that his children would inherit Eretz Yisrael and that eventually it would be his, and he had to go buy an exorbitant fee, a burial place for his wife in Eretz Yisrael. So he didn't see the fulfillment in the promise. Same thing with Yitzchak, the same thing with Yaakov. I made them a lot of promises that were only to be fulfilled in the future. They never saw the fulfillment. They could have had a lot of questions. They never complained. They never questioned me. They had perfect faith. Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishtachin. It's a shame they're lost and can't be found. Because you, Moshe Rabbeinu, first time I tell you something, and you don't see the fulfillment right away, I told you you're going to go to Paro and redeem the Jewish people, and your first encounter with Paro was a dismal failure, and Paro not only didn't let him go, but he made the work even harder. Right away you come to complain. Lo Marios, why'd you do bad to these people? Why'd you send me? By the time I went to Paro, things got worse, didn't get better. I had such great people before you, never questioned me, never complained. I promised them things, they didn't see the fulfillment. They also could have asked questions. They didn't. It's a shame they're lost and can't be found. Because you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are not like them. Two questions, a few questions. First of all, how could you have a complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu and tell him, you know, I had greater people than you, and shame they're lost, and how come you can't be like them? You don't. There's a famous maisa with the Rebbe Reb Zusha. The Rebbe Reb Zusha said that he's not afraid if after 120 years he comes to the heavenly court and they say to him, Reb Zusha, how come you weren't as great as the Rambam? I didn't have the potential that the Rambam had. The Rambam was a much greater person than me, and I wasn't born to be the Rambam. How come you weren't like the Baal Shem Tov? I didn't have the qualities of the Baal Shem Tov. You know what I'm afraid of? They're going to ask me, Zusha, how come you weren't Zusha? How come you didn't live up to your potential? That scares me. But why I wasn't somebody else? I'm not somebody else. And that's, you know, don't bring proofs from Hasidus Shemaises, but it's true, the idea is true. You can't demand from somebody something because somebody else could do it. Somebody else is somebody else. I'm not capable of that. That's very possible. Different people are capable of different things. Can't come to me and say, how come you're not like that one? How come you're not? I'm not. But how come you didn't realize your potential? That's a complaint. So therefore, this Rashi seems to contradict that. God is coming to Moshe Rabbeinu and saying, right, how come you're not like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? They were great people. They never questioned me. How come you? Moshe could have answered, I'm not Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. What do you want from me? I'm Moshe. I'm not on that level. You have a complaint against me, something that I could do, fine. But don't tell me I'm not like them. I'm not like them because maybe I don't have the potential to be like them. One question. Second question. Says that Chaval al da'avdin velo mishtachin. It's a shame they're lost and can't be found. First of all, that's redundant. If they're lost, obviously they can't be found. Because if they could be found, they wouldn't be lost. So why do you have to say they're lost and can't be found? And secondly, the avos are lost. I know where they are. Their bodies are in Maris HaMachpelah. Their neshamas are in Gan Eden. I could tell God what he said. They're lost. Where they're lost? Lost from where? They're not lost anywhere. Everybody knows where they are. Both the spiritual side and the physical side. So what do you mean they're lost? Lost to what? To answer it, therefore, I want to say this idea. Like we said, avos does not mean just fathers. The Avraham, Yitzchak, the Yaakov created the foundation and the spiritual potential of the Jewish people. And everything we have is there, they are the source of. We once mentioned what Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, that Avraham Avinu was tested with 10 tests, right, because it created the wellsprings, the reservoirs of power for all generations after that. Avraham Avinu, if he hadn't been able to fulfill the test of Lech Lecha, no Jew in history would ever be able to leave Chutz Laretz, family, friends, compatible environment, you know, used to your environment, and move to Eretz Yisrael. Anybody who does that gets the power from Avraham Avinu. It's in our blood. It's in our genes. No one would ever have been able to die al Kiddush Hashem. Or sacrifice his life or his family for al Kiddush Hashem if Avraham Avinu didn't do the Akedah. Just as an aside, that seems a little difficult to understand, because Goyim sacrificed themselves for their Avodah Zarah, for their beliefs, for their isms, right? How many Buddhist monks immolated themselves, you know, in sanctification of the name of Buddha? Or how many Christians went to the lions, you know, for the sake of Yashka? So Goyim can do it, and they don't need Avraham Avinu. But if it wouldn't be for Avraham Avinu, no Jew could have ever done it. What does that mean? So I think the answer is the following. I'm going to give you another place where you see the same idea. In my shul in Miami, it relatively was a quiet shul. In other words, there wasn't a lot of talking. It wasn't in Chutz Laretz. It's a Makas Medina. If you're familiar with shuls in Chutz Laretz, that they are extremely noisy. People do more talking than davening, and it's
you offer that shuls.
Hold on a second. Hold on. And it's known that that's a problem. My shul in Miami, as Mr. Nemtsov will attest to, was a relatively quiet shul. That wasn't the decorum was relatively good. I mean, let me tell you what bad decorum is. I once had to speak in New York in three shuls on Shabbos morning for the sake of the Moshav. It was years ago. So I spoke after Shacharis in one shul. Then I left that shul and went to the other shul, which started a little bit later. So I came for Kriyas HaTorah to the second shul. And then I was supposed to speak right after Kriyas HaTorah. And a third shul, which started davening a little bit later, I would get to for Musaf and speak after Musaf. So I got to the second shul, and it was like a fish market. People were not talking. They were like yelling to each other because they couldn't be heard over the din. So I figured something terrible happened over here. There must have been some, I don't know what, a bomb. I don't know what happened, but something is terrible. This place is like, you know, a pandemonium. So I pushed my way to the front, and they were laning. Except only about 10 people around the bima knew they were laning. Everybody else was talking. And since they were talking so loud, they had to yell to be able to be heard. That's bad decorum. In Miami, we had ushers and we clapped, but it was relatively a quiet place, but not perfect. We once had a bar mitzvah where a lot of not frum people came to the bar mitzvah. At the end of davening, a man came over to me who obviously was not necessarily a Shomer Shabbos or Shomer Mitzvahs, and he said to me, "Rabbi, I pray a lot in the conservative temple, the reform temple. You can hear a pin drop over there. They respect their place of worship. There's decorum. You people are supposed to be religious people, more religious. And why by you, there's people talking, walking around, why is the decorum over here not as good as over there? And you were supposed to be more religious people." And that's the Metzius. Metzius is that in Orthodox shuls, the decorum is a lot less than in conservative and reformed temples. What? So my Balabatim would have liked me to tell this man, because in the conservative and reform, they're coming to a show. Right? They don't feel at home over there. They feel like they're going to, an opera. Right? So when you go to a show, you keep quiet. Right? You have decorum. But we feel Hamish in our shul. And therefore, we're a little bit lax in the decorum. But I would tell my Balabatim, you know, there's a difference between Hamish and Behamish. This is not Hamish. You wouldn't do this in your living room, right? So don't. That's not an excuse. So what is the answer? The answer is that is the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara wants you to treat a place that has no holiness as if it's holy. And the Yetzer Hara wants you to treat a place with holiness as if it's not holy. So it's very easy to keep quiet and have decorum in a reform and conservative temple, because that's what the Yetzer Hara wants. He wants you to treat it as if it's holy. And there is no holiness. And in a frum shul, where there is holiness, he wants you to desecrate it. Then it's easy to talk. Same thing. For an idol worshiper to give his life for his idolatry, the sultan is right there helping him. Put it, pat him on the back. No problem. But for a Jew to give his life for the Rabbanu Shalom, the sultan puts up tremendous fight. And if it wouldn't be for Avraham Avinu, nobody could have ever done it. That's the difference. Okay, now that was just an aside. So, we, what?
Who said that?
I just did. the right. It's my shill in the audience. In any case, so the Avos created the reservoir of power for everything that the Jewish people are capable of doing. It's in our genes. It's they created the spiritual gene pool of Klal Yisrael. That's the Avos. And therefore, the questions that we asked are understandable. You can't say to Rav Zusha, how come you're not like the Rambam? The Rambam had his potential, Rav Zusha has his potential. But you can say to Moshe Rabbeinu, how come you don't have, there's certain things that the Avos created that every Jew has to have within them. They're part of the makeup of the Jewish people. They're not just somebody else. We're not just saying, how come you're not like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? But how come you don't have the qualities that the Avos created? That's what Rashi says. Va'era el ha'avos. I didn't appear to them as Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as individuals. I appeared to them as the Avos. And then there's a complaint against you. Because if they're the Avos, then somewhere within you should be found those powers. It's part of your genetic makeup, and it's a shame that it's lost within you and can't be found. That's what it means. It's there somewhere, but I can't find it yet. You haven't yet accessed. And I can complain why you aren't like them, because I'm not complaining why you aren't like these individuals, but why don't you have what these Avos created that's part of your genetic makeup? And in you, it's lost and can't be found. That's what it means. It's there somewhere. But in you, I can't find it. That's the idea. So, therefore, the bracha that we give our children can't be that you should be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Because Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov created the potential of the Jewish people. After that, we don't create potential. We access the potential that they created. It's part of us, and we access that potential. Whatever potential the Jewish people have was created and is part of us from the Avos. New potential is not created. What the Shvatim did is access what the Avos had and brought it out Lamaisa. Bereishis is the Sefer of the Avos. That's Sefer HaYitzira. That's the book of creation. They created the powers. And Shmos is Geula, is redemption, is redeeming those powers and actualizing them, bringing them to fruition. That's what the Shvatim do. Now, so we say the following. We bless our children, you should be like Ephraim and Manasseh. How do I know, right, that the powers of the Avos go on generation after generation? How do you know we do have those powers as part of our genetic makeup? How do we know it wasn't lost? So if I know that the original Shvatim had them, that's no proof that we have them. Because they grew up amongst the Avos, at least amongst Yaakov and many of them Yitzchak, right? So the Shvatim grew up amongst some of the Avos, and they, most of them grew up in Eretz Yisrael. So they had two things going for them, Eretz Yisrael and the fact that they had a personal connection to the Avos, to at least Yaakov Avinu, for most of their lives, and even to Yitzchak Avinu. So maybe that's why they have the qualities of the Avos, but maybe after that it didn't go on. How do I know it went on after them? Because it says by Ephraim and Manasseh, the Kori Bohem Shmi, the Shem Avosai Avraham the Yitzchak. In their In them should be called my name and the name of my forefathers. What's in a name? A name represents the essence of something. Okay, in fact, it says in the merit of the names of Bnei Israel, the world exists. In the merit of their names. It also says that the Eila Shmos Bnei Israel, that we are precious like the stars. Every star has a name. God calls it by name. Right? It says, HaMonem Mispor LaKochavim LeKulam Shemos Yikra. God counts every star, calls it by name. So to the Jewish people are as precious as the stars. God counts us and calls us by name. What does that mean? What's so precious about being called by a name? Every star has a name. So what? This star is Sirius and Alpha 1. What do you care what the stars are called? The fact that God gives them names, so what? In fact, around this time of year, I usually am in Chutz Lars. This is an exceptional year where I'm here till the end of January. But usually I'm in America around December 25th. And I've heard over the years the following commercial on the radio, year after year that I'm there. The only thing that changed is the price. It way back was $25, and it, last time I heard about it was $75. So they must be doing good business. They raised the prices. What is it? The radio announcer starts the commercial by saying, many of you have a big problem of what to buy your relatives or friends for the gift-giving season of Kratz. Because in America, there are many people who have everything. So what do you buy somebody who has everything? That's the problem. So if you have somebody on your list who has everything, we have the following suggestion. If you will send, years ago it was $25, last year it was $75, to the following address, we will name a star for the person that you are giving the gift. We will send him a certificate certifying where the coordinates of the star are and the star's name for him, and we will register it in the star registry. Let me tell you a little secret. You can take a blank piece of paper or a little notebook and write on the outside, star registry. Go outside, it's a clear night tonight, and name every star in the sky for you. Then record it in your star registry. This star's name for me, this star's name for me. It will be as legitimate as what they do. There's no such thing called the star registry. They made it up. And it's true. They're going to register it in the star registry. They have a book they said called Star Registry. And they register anybody who's foolish enough to send them $75. They go outside, say, okay, that star we're naming for this guy who sent us $75. Then they write it in the star registry. They send you a certificate that it's registered in the star registry. To call up a planetarium, right, or any legal body and tell them, I'd like to, you know, take my star home or whatever. They'll tell you, what are you talking about? Right? That star's not named for you, it's not recorded anywhere, but it's recorded in the star registry. What's the star registry? Right? It's what these people sell you this scam. They have a star, and it's perfectly legal. They didn't say that the star registry has any legal validity, right? It's a star registry. So, you want to name the stars? Name all. That's what it means. God calls all the stars by name.
We'll sell to you. We'll sell you that star.
Huh?
We'll sell it to you. We'll sell you a whole star.
Right. So, Lemaisa, right? That's what it means. God calls it stars by names. The idea is that a name represents the essence, the qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents of the thing that it describes in Hebrew. Adam HaRishon called names to everything in creation. He didn't just arbitrarily give a name, but he saw the essence of the thing, and the name fits the essence. For instance, Adam is because he comes from Adama, Adame, he could be like God. Kelev is because it has one heart to its master. It's a loyal pet. Kelev, like a heart, has a lave, has a heart in there. A Kelev. And it's much deeper than that. the numerical value and the letters and what they look like and what their source is. It goes way beyond the simple idea. And that's why it says that every person really has four names. The name that God gives you, the name your parents give you, the name your friends give you, and the Iker name is the one you make for yourself. The way I understand that is, a name again represents your qualities, your abilities, capabilities, talents. Some abilities, capabilities, talents are given to you when God created your neshama. It was made with a certain character, certain qualities to fulfill your purpose in this world. So God endowed your neshama with these qualities. That's the name God gave you. Some qualities you don't get when your neshama was created, but they develop through heredity. That's the name your parents give you. That's the qualities you get from heredity. Some qualities you get from what you learn from people around you, from the environment. That's the name your friends give you. But all of that is potential. It's a big zero. If you have a lot of zeros, still a zero. If you put something in front of those zeros, it makes it a big number. The main thing is what you do with all that potential, what name you make for yourself, that's the Iker. But those are the names that a person has, meaning its various qualities and their sources. So it says that the names of the Avos, V'yikorei Bohem, are in Ephraim and Manasseh. V'yikorei Bohem, Shmi V'shem Avosoi. My name and the names of my forefathers are in them, meaning the powers, abilities, capabilities, talents that the Avos created are found potentially in Ephraim and Manasseh. That means that if it went on to them, there's no reason to assume that it stopped there and it's not by us too. Because they didn't grow up in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't grow up in close proximity to the Avos, and yet they still have those powers. That means that it's part of the genetic makeup of the Jewish people, no matter who they are and where they are, and therefore it applies to all of us equally. And it didn't stop. So how do I know that I have those qualities and I have that potential and my children have the potential? From Ephraim Menashe. That's what we tell our children. Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim V'Chemenashe. You should realize what potential you have. That is the greatest bracha you can give a child or a student or anyone, is to let them know what they can do, what qualities they have, what potential, what abilities, talents. That's because if you can have tremendous talents, tremendous potential, if you don't know anything about it, you'll never do anything with it. That's why it says in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv Ha'adam Shenivra B'Tzelem Elokim, man is precious because he was created in God's image. But it's an extra precious since that God let us know we're created in his image. You could be created in God's image, if you don't know anything about it, you'll never do anything with it. But if God told you you're created in his image, then you can do something with it. The greatest bracha you can give a person is to let them know what they can do, what their talents are, what their abilities. You should know you have these talents, you have these qualities, you have these capabilities. And it's also a bracha to let a person know what he can't do. I always like to give the example. You have a person who has the most terrible singing voice you can imagine. Okay? I know a lot of Bali Tefillah that fit this. When they sing, it's like dragging your nails on a chalkboard. That's how bad it sounds. And you see your friend who has this really terrible voice going to the library one day and taking out a stack of books on how to be a chazan. Wouldn't it be a bracha to go over to him and say, listen, unless you plan to be a chazan in an institution for the deaf, right, it's not for you. Because you'll open your mouth the first time, you won't have a minion. People will run away in fright. So be an author, be something else, but not a chazan. This is not your vocation. You are not cut out for that. Right? It's a bracha. Now, don't let the guy waste years and years of his life, and the first time he gets up, that's the end of his... Nobody will hire him to be a chazan. So it's a bracha to let people know what they can do and what they can't do. So the bracha we give our children is, you should know that you have within you the potential of the Avos, Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Study their lives, see what they created as Avos, the Emunah, the Bitachon, right? The Mesiras Nefesh. What Avraham Avinu accomplished with his ten tests. That's what's in you. It's a tremendous bracha. Yisimcha Elokim Kefrayim V'Chemenasha. You can't be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because you can't create potential. But you can realize the potential you have, and you have that potential. How do I know? Because Ephraim and Menashe had it. And they didn't have anything going for them more than you have. They didn't grow up in Eretz Israel. They didn't grow up amongst the Avos. They were distanced from the Avos, yet they still had these qualities. It means that it goes on for every generation. But there's one more important point, and that is, Vayosem es Ephraim v'fnei Menashe. Yaakov saw prophetically that even though Ephraim and Menashe had tremendous potential, not only that, Menashe, who was the Bechor, had more potential than Ephraim. But he also saw prophetically that Ephraim would realize more of his less potential than Menashe realized of his greater potential. Who's greater? The one with the greater potential, or the one who realizes more of his potential? That's what Yaakov said. The bracha is, recognize your potential. But never think that just having potential is the main thing. The main thing is what you access, what you realize. The proof? Ephraim had less potential. He was the younger brother. Menashe was the Bechor. But Ephraim realized more of his lesser potential than Menashe realized of his greater potential. Ephraim comes before Menashe. So you should be inspired by what potential you have, but you shouldn't feel that that's enough. You have to realize that potential. That's the bracha. There's only one problem. I said, we don't give boys the bracha to be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because we can't create potential like they did, we just realize potential. Then why do we give the girls a bracha, Kisara, Rivka, Rachel, Valea? We give our daughters a bracha, they should be like the Imals. So I have two answers. One, the women will like, one, the women won't like so much. So we'll say one for the men, one for the women. First for the men, so we can end on a high note. For the men, I would say that the Imals didn't create potential either. They only helped their husbands create their potential. So Mimela, what's it called? You can give a bracha to a girl to be like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, because the women didn't create potential, so they can be like them. They can also be those kinds of people who will help others bring out their potential, whatever. That's one possibility. There's another possibility. And that is that all women have the ability to create potential. You can be like Sarah. Sarah Rivka Rachel did create potential, just like the Avos did. A boy, you can't tell that, because we can't create potential. We can only realize the potential we have. But women have a koach to bring new life into this world. They can mamish create new potential. So then, since they were given that power, they were given the power to create new spiritual potential too. So a woman can be like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea, even though a man can't be like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Meaning, men can't create potential, they can be like the Shvatim to realize it. But a woman can be mamish like the source, because she can also create new potential.